League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi guys, it's Dan here from the Tottenham Way. As some of you know, this season we're sponsored by Harry's, the US shaving company that's coming over to the UK. If you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you'll get a trial set for just $2.95 that's worth $11.95. In that trial set, you will get shaving foam, a blade, a travel cover, and a handy little box it all comes in. I've subscribed, I use it regularly, and I love it. It's much better than the regular razors you buy in Boots that are all baggaged up in those security boxes. And Tom, despite being slightly bearded, also uses it too, don't you, Tom?
I do, and I absolutely love it. It's really good.
So if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you'll get your trial set for just $2.95. It helps us keep the content free, which we always plan to do, and it also helps Harry's as well. Thanks very much for your time. Enjoy the podcast.
And it's live.
And it's live. It's not live.
It's not. No, it's not. That's the point.
Dan, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good. It seems like a long time ago, sitting here a week ago. Lots happened in the world of Spurs since we were last sitting here.
It has. I would say two genuinely statement results in the last week.
Yeah.
Real Madrid and Liverpool.
Talk about them both. This week, we have got a guest. First time in quite a while. I know, novelty. It's Dan's friend George. George, you are a Liverpool fan as well, and that's primarily the reason that you're here. And you're going to be discussing with us quite just what happened on Sunday.
I will be. It's still quite raw, but yeah, I'll do my best.
That's all we ask.
I should say that I wasn't sure George was going to actually make it on. Okay. I mean, I invited him before the game, and I called him up just before kickoff, and he said, "I've got a good feeling about this one." And then afterwards, I didn't hear anything from him, and I thought you might be too bitter to come on. So good of you for actually turning up.
Last night I didn't know actually, but when I woke up this morning, I thought I'd go for it. It'd be poor form otherwise.
Good man. I don't think we've ever had a fan on. We've had Liam on after Liam Toomey of the SBN after Chelsea games. Very, very measured, magnanimous, like.
Yeah, and journalist first, fan second, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, but I don't think we've ever had a fan pre or post game. I'm pretty sure.
We haven't. This is the first.
So this is a first for the Tottenham Way. George, you were at Wembley yesterday, weren't you? But you were saying before that it was in the home end.
I was in the home end. It was a pal of mine who is a Spurs fan. He's got a membership so he could have access to tickets to Wembley. And I was with two other quite hardcore Spurs fans and a couple of kind of neutrals. But yeah, where I was sitting was fairly, you could tell there was a few Liverpool fans about and a few people who were kind of impartial, so it wasn't kind of in the hardcore Spurs area, I don't think.
I don't think there really is one at Wembley yet, but it seems to be I
was quite impressed.
Yeah.
I wondered afterwards whether it was a poor game to judge it on, because obviously Spurs raced into a 2-0 lead and the atmosphere was up, and I actually remember thinking, oh, this is way better than I thought. But there was a moment just after kick-off, so obviously there was a bit of noise and the players came out. And then as soon as Liverpool kicked off and immediately went to the back line and started playing about, it was like someone turned the volume off. It was so quiet. Mm. And obviously then Kane scored the goal and it was all quite loud after that. So I can imagine how in other games, such as like your Swansea 0-0 or whatever, it might have been pretty dead. But it seemed good yesterday.
I think that was the best atmosphere this season. And actually Pochettino said afterwards, you know, that was really helpful for making Wembley feel like home. Almost as if that was the moment where the fans felt it, the players felt it, and it kind of worked in harmony together. Mm. So I think, obviously, from a result point of view, you didn't pick a good one, but I think from an atmosphere point of view, that was the best Wembley's been for a league game. Mm. The Dortmund game, under lights, Champions League, always a bit different, it's always a bit special. Mm. But I think that was the moment where, in the league, it started to feel like Tottenham were playing at home.
I think Wembley amplifies everything as well, doesn't it? So if you're loud and having a good time, and like when the crowd went up for the first and second goal, when it was like, we might be all right here, this is going to be quite enjoyable as an afternoon. So it hasn't felt like that at Wembley yet. But like you say, when the Liverpool goal went in and you start, it's like a collective groan, but it's almost a loud silence. And it's quite odd as an atmosphere. And I think that must be really... I know players can, or they're supposed to take it out of their minds, but you can't ignore a stadium, being in a stadium that large and being that quiet or that clearly nervous.
You're right, the Salah goal actually, and that's why we just, I just mentioned that, and we'll come on to this I think when we analyse the game, but if Liverpool got to half-time 2-1, I think we could have been sitting here having quite a different conversation, because the stadium was a bit edgy, everyone was quiet. Liverpool had the ball like most of the game, and I thought, I actually quite fancied us to nick one. Conceivably, we looked so bad at the back that we still could have shipped more. But I can imagine that the longer the game went on at 2-1, the more the fans would have been like, oh, this happened against Burnley, whatever, you know. Mm. I think it could have easily turned, and instead we also gave away another one for 3-1.
That didn't happen, did it?
Didn't happen, as we will come on to. But we have to talk about the other pretty major result that we had this week, which is Real Madrid. We sat here last week and we were quite coy about getting a result or going, I don't see any reason why we can't if. And then we kind of went out there and we saw, well, an hour and a quarter before kickoff, I looked at it and just thought, okay, I can't be annoyed at this or I can't be worried about this. It's Real Madrid away and we've put out a weird ass team. I'm just going to enjoy this. And it made, I know we drew 1-1, but even if we'd lost 3-0, I think I would have genuinely enjoyed it and thought of it for what it actually was, which was Spurs at the Bernabeu. How did you feel when you saw the lineup come out?
Yeah, obviously, like everyone, I was a bit puzzled by the lineup. And it's amazing. Pochettino's completely jumped on it as if it was a masterstroke. and said in his press conference before Liverpool that, you know, he's preaching as if, you know, sometimes, you know, I get it wrong. Sometimes people doubt me, but you know, you've got to trust the coach. You've got to trust the manager. And I'm not so sure, but I mean, it obviously works really well. And
how much of it was strategy, and how much was his hand?
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, his hand was forced. I mean, there's always different things you can do as a manager. He could have played Son. He could have played Dier in midfield. But I mean, the Winks thing, for instance, obviously Winks was brilliant, and it was a coming of age performance for him. As much as it was a coming of age performance for Tottenham, it felt like a really seminal night for Spurs and for Harry Winks. But you just wonder, you know, I don't know if Dembele had passed that fitness test, would he have played? We'll probably never know.
Was he that close to starting? Was it a case of?
Well, I think they took Dembele out to Real with the intention of playing him, him having missed the last three or four games. And then I think what's happened is he had an ankle problem and he's been overcompensating or running in a different way, and now he's got a hip problem as a result of the ankle problem. So, yeah, poor old Musa.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, Pochettino really got it right, and he just seems to be in one of those periods at the moment where everything he does is really coming off. We'll come on to it, but against Liverpool, again, he made some decisions that looked a bit odd on paper, like starting Aurier and playing Ali a bit deeper, starting Son. But they all worked perfectly. And it was the same story against Real Madrid. Everything he touches just seems to turn to gold at the moment.
Reasonably comfortable against Real Madrid as well. I mean, a merited point. But I think, I mean, Lloris, you can point to Lloris's save as much as you can point to Navas's save against Kane. If you think, you know, on another day, Benzema puts that away with no trouble, and Kane puts it away with no trouble as well. I certainly, if you gave him that chance again, neither of them would miss that chance, I don't think. But apart from that,
yeah, I don't really buy the narrative that like Spurs matched Real Madrid and it was a really even game. I think Real had the better chances; they were on top, but nonetheless, it was not an undeserved point at all. Mm. Whenever you go to Real Madrid, anyone, whether it's Barca or Bayern or whoever, you need to get a bit of luck to get a result, a decent result. They're the best team in the world by far.
Spurs
got a bit of luck, but I think equally they're a bit unlucky because Kane normally scores them, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, giving that chance another 9 times, he's not missing that again, is he, if he gets one at home. Well, the performance reminded me of the Arsenal game in Poch's first season when we were still kind of being worked as a team and a lot of people still weren't sure of their place. And it's totally different circumstances, but we were going to sort of an away ground where we've notoriously struggled or would normally struggle in the past. And we just kind of had a really measured look about ourselves. Every single individual just did the job that was necessary of him. You look at someone like Vertonghen, who had just a brilliant game, without being really spectacular. It just felt like there was a bit more of a, what am I trying to say, like another cycle of development. That Arsenal game was almost the first cycle that we had, and then it was almost proof to ourselves that we could pull off the stuff that Poch wanted us to do.
Yeah, I mean, a point that I might make again later in the pod when we're talking about Spurs and Liverpool is that Real Madrid and then Liverpool was just such amazing signs of Spurs' development as a team, I think. And when Pochettino first came to the club, it was quite a simple but effective pressing team, and it was all hard work and harrying and forcing the opposition to make mistakes. And then for the last couple of years, it's been more about possession and kind of suffocating teams and just getting on top of them. And then this year, Real Madrid, Dortmund and Liverpool have all been performances where Spurs haven't had the majority of possession. They've let the other team have it, but they've just played really maturely and really cleverly and hit them on the break, found weaknesses, exploited weaknesses, and played with a kind of maturity and togetherness and kind of canniness that I think was missing definitely last year in the Champions League, when Spurs looked a bit naive and they kind of tried to take Premier League style to Europe and it just didn't work. This year they're like, fuck that, you know, we're going to play in a different way, and we're going to play against Liverpool in a different way, who we haven't beaten for 10 games, and it's working, and it's just a really positive sign of progress that they can do these different things. And I think, just given the players out, and given that it was a midfield like Winks, Sissoko and Eriksen against Modric, Casemiro and Kroos, who don't tend to lose the ball at all.
You looked comfortable, didn't you? There was no sense of like being overawed. When last year was obviously a bit of a horror show in the Champions League for you. When was it when Dortmund came to Wild Lane and won 3-0?
That was Europa League a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that was a much weaker team, yeah. But yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, Pochettino probably knew back then that he wasn't going to be able to win that.
The European games where you underperformed, you looked overawed and not used to it, and it was the polar opposite, I think, against Madrid.
Liverpool went to Real Madrid a couple of years ago, didn't they? I mean, was it Rodgers then?
We had a Rodgers game where he threw it, where he played like a reserve game. I think we only lost it 1-0. It actually wasn't that bad a display, but it was kind of one of the big Liverpool fans would say it was one of the kind of nails in the coffin. We'd fought so hard to get there. I think we'd had a bit of a disastrous run in the league, and he kind of wrote off the game, which was an error, because most Liverpool had a run, and it makes me appreciate Benitez more as the years go by. But towards like even after the years after we won the Champions League, we lost the final in 2007, but we had games in various Champions League runs where we went away to Real Madrid and won 1-0. Everyone remembers the 4-0 at Anfield, but we actually won the away leg 1-0, and we had that. We could see the chances of that. We probably weren't the better team that day, but we just had that kind of like comfort. And by that point, as a Liverpool fan going through the noughties, by the time it got to those games, I wouldn't have been happy with a kind of 3-0, because I knew that Liverpool had a chance of nicking something. I actually thought, in my accumulator last week, I had Spurs down for a draw. Because I actually had a feeling that you, because they've not been playing very well, Madrid, I actually thought that you'd perform. But as the more of those games you rack up, the less acceptable it becomes when someone does do something like Rodgers did, which is why loads of Liverpool fans turned against him, because they were used to going to the Bernabeu and actually being competitive.
We're not. That was really bizarre, wasn't
not
it?
Not yet, actually, but in a way. But we will be soon.
Yeah, it felt like another, like I say, developmental cycle, I suppose. Notable mentions for Vertonghen, Dave Sanchez, Loris, obviously, but you mentioned Winks there, but he didn't just kind of stand out. The reason I kind of make that comparison to Arsenal as well is that he was almost like the Mason of that performance. Quite raw still, quite new to the team. A lot of pressure and expectation put onto him.
Yeah, I mean, what the comparison that I've seen used in the last week.
Weeks to Mason.
I know. But the comparison in terms of performance I've seen is when Wilshere did that against Barcelona.
Okay.
Just kind of controlled the game, didn't look out of place, and then everyone was like, "Oh, Barcelona are going to sign him," as if they didn't have Xavi, Iniesta, and Busquets at the time. But I think that can be kind of, it was, as I said, Winks' kind of coming of age performance, and I think Spurs fans have kind of known it for the last few months, but not been sure about it, about how good he can be and about his quality. And I think it was one of those weird occasions where Spurs fans knew it for sure at the same time as everyone else. Because, you know, previously with kind of Kane, Spurs fans knew, I think, a long time before everyone else accepted it, how special he was and how good he was going to be. And that's been the case with a few other players in the past. But I think kind of everyone at the same time was like, wow, he's really got something. And if he carries on, I mean, obviously he's got to keep doing it, but if he carries on now, you know, he looks like a shoo-in for the England squad, basically.
Oh, he has to be.
Yeah.
He's the only one that can do...
The only one who can actually pass.
I can vouch for you, actually. You have been banging on about Winks for the last few months. Actually, I was really looking forward to actually watching him play against Liverpool to see what he was up to. And I actually think it was almost a game where I couldn't really judge him because he didn't really do a huge amount in the game because other people were. And he was tidy, he didn't make a mistake, obviously. But that Madrid game made me suddenly think, oh, actually, if he was in the England squad, it wouldn't be... I think if he started for England in the summer, I still think it would be more an indication of how desperate England's centre midfield situation is as opposed to him necessarily.
Why? He's just held his own against Modric, Cruz and
Because I don't think,
Casemiro,
I don't think he's suddenly going to make us, give us the level of ball control that we need to be the kind of football
player we want. But I mean, the question is, who else then? Jordan Henderson?
If you look at... So everyone says Jordan Henderson can't pass, and for the last few England games, he said he had two really, really average games.
To be fair,
look
to
at
Jordan
the ball
Henderson,
he played to Salah yesterday.
Did he play the ball?
He played that ball.
That was
it
a clearance.
Was an unbelievable pass.
No, it was 100% clearance.
It was a ticket deflection.
It was no way.
I actually watched the highlights again just to remind myself. Because obviously, when you watch it live, you don't always see stuff. So
Credit where it's due, I think it was a good pass.
So he has got it in him, and I think
we can't at this stage in October say that if Winks is starting for England next year is unjust.
It was
an indicator of decline, because if he carries on, if he builds on this week where he's held his own against more or less by himself in this number six role against Real, and then goes to Liverpool and I think held his own against Milner, Henderson, Emre Can. A very good midfield. I think if he builds on that, then
I didn't learn anything from yesterday because Liverpool spent 70% of the game with the ball. I didn't see it. The Spurs midfield didn't really have to do a huge amount. And I'll make the point later about how you can judge Spurs from the game yesterday compared to, say, the game they've got at Old Trafford this weekend. Madrid one was the more impressive one. But if he started for England, if he spends the rest of the season in Spurs midfield playing next to Dyer, you have a great Champions League run, then obviously it changes things. But I still don't think he's necessarily the kind of answer that England have in centre field.
I think that's wrong. I think that's, I think it's purely comparative, though. I mean, the people that are in the England squad at the moment who play that same role, Henderson, Livermore,
Eric, he's in front of Liverpool. Yeah. I mean, even Dyer, obviously, I'm a fan of Eric Dyer, but he hasn't got the same ability to kind of keep the ball and move it forward that Winks has. He just doesn't. And I think the only thing that's potentially stopping him is if Wilshere's resurgence continues and Southgate for some bizarre reason decides that it's between the two of them, and which would be a shocker, because if Wilshere does continue his resurgence, then, you know, credit where it's due, they should both be in there, because England need all the kind of ball players they can get, basically.
Yeah. Is the highest praise we can say for Winks is that we don't look like we're missing Dembele, who's arguably the best ball player, the ball carrier that we've got in the team, probably one of the strongest midfielders in the whole league. He's the best at doing what he does when he's fit, but it doesn't look like he's ever going to be fit again, does it? So Winks has really stepped up to it and taken his chance, which is all that I think Pochettino wanted from him, wasn't it? It wasn't a case of coming in and filling a gap, it was let's see what you got, and he's really, really taken it, isn't he now?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. What more could you ask, really? As I said, who knows whether he would have started against Real Madrid. I suspect he probably would have if Dembele was fit, and maybe Sissoko would have missed out. But yeah, he's really, at the moment, he's Tottenham's most important midfielder, isn't he?
And then
he'd probably be rested against West Ham because he's needed for United. And just a few weeks ago, or you know, a couple of months ago, certainly that West Ham game would have been one where you're saying, well, that's the perfect game for Harry Winks, you know, yeah. And another start, a chance to get some minutes, a chance to impress. And actually, now we're saying, never risk him in that. Mm. We've got to go to Old Trafford in a big title game on Saturday. So
yeah,
that's how far he's come.
We haven't lost. So you mentioned that we haven't beaten them in 10 games, and that's 9 in the league. Liverpool, sorry. Why was Sunday so different? And before, because I know you've got some views on what that game says about where Spurs are in terms of development and stuff. But just from a Liverpool point of view, you know, Klopp's been in there just over 2 years now, isn't it? His first game was against Spurs two years ago, and it seems as if the problems that that inherited from Rodgers, they're slightly different, but they're still the same volume of problems that he's dealing with and doesn't seem to have dealt with in that time. What is the difference between Liverpool 2 years ago, who we just couldn't beat, even last season, we couldn't seem to get over that psychological block of doing anything against you? What's the difference? Why was yesterday?
Hold on,
so
it's not a difference in Liverpool, is it? It's a difference in Spurs.
Well, yeah, I think so. Well,
yeah, but Rodgers, Liverpool haven't been that good. Okay, I'm not being funny here, but you've been good and better than us, I would say, 2 out of the last 5 years. I mean, categorically better than us by a mile.
I think
there's no way
about,
we should have lost 9.
You're talking about the
league.
First of those 5 years. It's the first two. The last 3 years, Spurs have gone into most games either in front of Liverpool in the league or playing the better football. It's actually been, I had a look through all the results for the last like 7-8 years, and it's actually quite remarkable that our record's been so good against you. And when I look at the fixtures at the beginning of each season, and I look at being a kind of southern Liverpool fan, I look at the United game, and I immediately look at the Spurs game because of Dan, because that's the second most thing riding on it. And I always feel blessed that our results, while you guys have been so strong, have been so good. So even after that, so our title run under Rodgers, we obviously won 5-0 and 4-0. But since then, and that's often seen as kind of like the pinnacle of Liverpool's recent kind of play, but even since then, we've won 4 and drawn 3 of the games against you. So at some point, away at Spurs, we probably were going to get beaten, I think. If you look at it, it was going to happen at some point. And obviously, we had a shocker of a game. It's not panic stations yet for Klopp, but it's happening so much, so regularly at the moment, that he's going to have to show some willingness to change, or he will start to feel the pressure. As you see, you know, Koeman's obviously gone today. It doesn't take many more games for him to start from a serious pressure. Like already, our next game is against Huddersfield. If we didn't beat Huddersfield at home, then you can imagine that there certainly would be pressure. If we beat Huddersfield at home, you guys have got to play each other. I mean, so United and Spurs have got to play each other, and there's a few other. That gap will close and the pressure will be off, but I think it was going to happen that Spurs were going to have a good win against Liverpool because you've been a better team for 3 years.
Yeah.
What's Klopp not done after the Rodgers reign is a kind of separate topic, and is one that's kind of hard to defend him on.
It's hard to defend. This is ironic. it was pretty laughable actually at times. I mean,
it was bad.
It was
as bad as I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a defence. We've made defences look bad before, and I think that's kind of fine. Sometimes you have to hold your hands up. But, I mean, Kane literally 2 to 3 seconds, well, ish, before that ball comes down, knowing that Lovren is going to miss it by a good foot and a half.
Every
I'd
goal
say.
Had... except for the fourth goal, which was one mistake by the keeper. All the other goals, it wasn't like there was one individual error. They all had a couple of errors involved in them. Actually, I suppose maybe the second one was just that Lovren mistake. But no, I said this to Dan, and I know he's going to disagree, but you kind of backed it a little bit. I felt that yesterday was a hard game to judge Spurs on. I know a lot of Spurs fans, all the headlines are kind of lauding Spurs. They've put down a marker for their title challenge.
I disagree with that. All I've seen so far is Liverpool show how not to defend.
It's for my Spurs mates. Everyone was kind of eulogising. I didn't look at the papers, but I thought that Kane was on the kind of front page of the Times, and I think it was a tough game to judge Spurs on, because you won't have a game this season or next season or probably for the next 50 years where you get given four goals in a game. You could draw Nuneaton Borough in the FA Cup third round and they wouldn't give you four goals. You'd have to work harder for it. It was like a weird fixture where every goal was handed. I know you created a few other chances, but some of them were due to mistakes as well. I know it was Liverpool on the tin, and it says Liverpool 1, Spurs 4, but you played a team who have never... I can't think of a worse defensive performance.
Yeah, see, I do. I don't think that's
I don't think you... I don't think you had to force it.
I get what you're saying. There were a lot of mistakes, and obviously there were quite comical mistakes. The first one, the second one from Lovren. The Matip header straight to Ali, I agree. But then I think you've just got to give Spurs credit because they exploited Liverpool's weakness.
I don't think you can give credit for Lloris thinking, I'm going to throw the ball out towards Kane. You can't legislate for Lovren doing what he did.
No, well, but Kane's still got a lot to do there.
But put it this way,
Liverpool picked out the other player. It was one.
Liverpool still had that defence when Man U played them, and Man U played in a certain way and got a 0-0 draw. And a lot of people are saying, you know, that was a big mistake for Man U not to take Liverpool's defence. So, you know, just using that example alone, you've got to give Spurs credit because, you know, they knew what was weak about Liverpool, and they said, right, we're gonna go and systematically exploit that now. And there was a point in the first half where it became very clear that Spurs just knew that Liverpool's weakness was dealing with balls in behind. And there was one point where I think Ali just literally punted it upfield and just let Son run into the space. And, you know, Son doesn't start every game. I think that was his fourth start of the season. So that there's Pochettino saying that this Liverpool team can be got at with pace. You know, that there was no guarantee that Son would start.
It makes it sound like Pochettino beforehand sat and looked at a video and thought, oh, if you throw the ball out to halfway line...
But that's exactly what he does.
Like, he's made mistakes before, but he's never done that before. That was like a different level of bad. I think that was generally just a piece of natural organic play.
But that's literally exactly what Pochettino does. He'll say like, right, that's what good managers do. They'll watch hours of footage and say,
yeah, but I didn't think existed that footage. I think that was generally just the keeper needed to wanted to get rid of it, saw Kane up there, and it was just a completely unpredictable error from a player who made this the worst decision in that point in time. You could have
I think we'll agree to disagree, but I think Liverpool have weaknesses, and Spurs would have looked at that and said,
so I'll give you
we need to basically put high balls toward Lovren, so that's why Lloris threw the ball toward Lovren.
I don't think that was a pre-planned thing. What I will say, and I remember having this chat before the game with the guys I was with, is that for some reason in the games that Spurs have played against Liverpool the last few years, everyone's known how to play against Liverpool. You sit deep and counter-attack. And for some reason, Pochettino has, up till yesterday, resisted. And it's almost as if him and Klopp had like a bet that they'd both do the same thing, like try and out-press each other. And Liverpool have won those games. And this was the game when it seemed as if he...
Well, they won one and drew in three.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
You know,
I remember
you saying it, particularly in the... I think it was the Anfield game when Mane scored twice, where Liverpool, I don't think, were on particularly good form going into that, and you just play a high line and try to press, and Mane just ran in behind twice the first half, and it was weird that he didn't.
Do you think in that game, maybe? Maybe Klopp exploited?
No, I think
had a look at Tottenham's high line and maybe exploited. Do you think it was just two random mistakes?
No. I think that Pochettino was pragmatic yesterday, but even then, the game was so early when Spurs scored their first goal. I remember thinking, I had a perfect, lovely view of the pitch. I was thinking, it'll be interesting to see what Pochettino does tactically. And now, looking back at the game, it looks like he played super defensive to hit Spurs on the break. But even then, you scored that first goal so fast that I'm like, oh, well, then obviously, naturally, it becomes the next 5 minutes you're going to sit in a little bit. And then you score the second straight away. So even now, I can't definitely say that Pochettino set out to play very deep and hit Liverpool on the break. It would make sense that he did, but I couldn't say it for sure because it ended up as kind of, we gave you two goals straight away. You know what I mean? That's what I mean, like, it can't be a marker for Spurs because the two goals were so shambolic that it diluted the rest of the game in terms of judging what the plan was.
I think it's a fair point. To go 2-0 up on 11 minutes is unusual in the Premier League.
Yeah,
anyway.
Of course,
I still think you're talking bollocks, but what I will say is that I agree with you on the last game at Anfield, so the 2-0 win for Liverpool, where I think. But this is what I was saying earlier about Spurs developing tactically and systematically, because I think Pochettino's idea has often been in the past that we play our way regardless of the opposition. And he used to say that quite a lot, like, you know, we'll focus on ourselves. He used to say that. And I think the Liverpool game was a good example last season at Anfield. It was a good example that you can't do that all the time, because if you turn up at Anfield against Mane, playing a high line with Ben Davis, who was really short of confidence at the time and a bit off form, then, you know, bad things will happen to you. And they did. And I think this year it's just an example of how Spurs have developed. The fact that he's much more willing to be pragmatic and play. You know, he as far as we know, Ben Davis was fine to start that game. That's what Pochettino said at the press conference. Now, he might have been flagging after illness, but it looked like he deliberately put someone quick at left back because he knew that Salah will be playing there in the Mane
had
the
better of, I thought Salah still.
Yeah, I thought Salah did, but my point is he wasn't just focused
your
on Tottenham.
Your point about
he was focused
adjusting
on
his mindset, Liverpool. I'll give you that. No, he's adjusting how he plays and being more pragmatic. I'll tell you that. So maybe I'm being too bitter. Let's give Pochettino the credit. Say maybe he did set up defensively, and the goals came early. Fine.
I'm not saying Klopp, defensively. There's a difference between letting the other team have the ball and being defensive. I think at Real Madrid you could say it was defensive because it was almost a back five. But I think against Liverpool,
you were defensive against us. But again, it's whether it became just the natural pattern of play because of the goals. But I think the thing that sets Pochettino and Klopp apart at the moment is Klopp has failed, and it's starting to really get on my nerves, to be pragmatic. So I've never seen him, like, at the moment we try and play a brand of football where we leave two at the back and pile everyone else forward, and there are so few defences in history that have been good enough to do that, to leave 2-on-2 or 2-on-1. So most of the time I was watching it and going through live matches when you can see it more, because obviously you can see what the defensive shape is. Minute one, it was just Lovren and Matip Sanchez and Kane, and then the closest player to them was another Spurs player, and you were just like, God, Barcelona did it with like Puyol and Pepe, and even they got exposed sometimes. Everyone would be like, oh, Barcelona can't defend, you can get them. Of course you can get them, they leave two people at the back. Liverpool can't do it, they haven't got good enough players. We haven't got Iniesta and Xavi controlling the midfield enough to let you play that way. And like Conte realised it last year with Chelsea and changed to a back three, went for 3-4-3. I think Klopp's at the stage now where he's got to do something innovative tactically. He can't keep leaving his two centre-backs, who, I know they made massive individual errors yesterday, but you could put Vertonghen and Alderweireld in the Liverpool team, and in a couple of months' time, you wouldn't be talking about them being the best defenders in the league. They'd get exposed because it's ridiculous, and he's got to change it. He's got to try something different, like three at the back, tell Jordan Henderson never to go 10 yards away from his centre-half, something. Because we're asking for it, we haven't got the players for it, and it's that lack of pragmatism, which is Wenger-esque, basically, not changing anything you do. And it's becoming a headache. Yeah.
Just on before we go on to individuals from the game, last point on tactics, please. That do you remember the obviously it's only a while ago, but the Dortmund game, and how we played on the break, and I think our first two goals against Dortmund were quite similar to how we got behind Liverpool. It was like, let them, they were really high up the pitch and we just sort of stormed through them with a couple
of touches. Know that Pochettino was trying to do that. It could have just all been very coincidental.
To be fair though, afterwards it was we didn't plan on them having so much of the ball.
It's true that Kane said that, but
Pochettino's riding a nice wave at the moment. I don't think he got all those nailed on tactically.
I'm not saying he didn't do that against Liverpool. I think he very much did, but I think that there was a happy accident against Dortmund where he thought maybe he underestimated just how powerful Kane can be on the break.
Well, I would perhaps. I mean, yeah, possibly. I mean, I would go back all the way to the Juve friendly at Wembley, when for the first time it looked like Spurs were playing in a very different way, and that was slightly more counter-attacking, pressed in a slightly different way, and, you know, kind of used Sissoko on the counter, which was something we hadn't really seen before. And it did suggest to me that they'd spent the summer pre-season working on something slightly different. It wasn't all about possession football. And that's kind of
working.
Yeah, and that's how it's panned out. But it may well be that Pochettino has got tremendously lucky in every game
so
far.
Some people stumble across these things, you know. Dele Alli had, that's hard to say, his best game for us this season, I think. Agree?
Yeah, I think he looked back to himself. He hasn't really looked like the Dele Alli of kind of the second half of last season so far, has he? And
how much of that is Pochettino? Has Pochettino, do you think, recognised that he's struggling a little bit in that familiar role of up with Kane, trying to find space? And I think you said a couple of weeks ago how much Premier League defences are not, maybe not found him out, but are much more aware of the threat that he poses. If you look at the goals he scored of getting between centre backs last season, and he really hasn't been able to do that this season, despite getting three or four goals so far. Do you think, was it just a case that we didn't have the players?
Well, I don't know if it's they found him out, but I think he scored 18 league goals last year, I think. So naturally, at the start of the season, people aren't unaware of the goal threat he poses. And they've been doubling up, and he just hasn't really been able to find the space that he was able to find last year, especially in the box. And I think I was really surprised when he played the deeper role. I thought it was going to be Eriksen next to Winks, but he played deeper. Again, it looked like it was forced because apparently Eric Dier was ill on Friday, so Pochettino didn't have much choice there. But he, I think he got it right because Ali, he just looked in the mood, didn't he? I mean, yeah. I remember he had that kind of spat with Emery Chan, didn't he? I can't remember what it was.
2 years
ago, and he just relentlessly mugged him up. Yeah. So it did kind of look as though he had a.
Could you play that role through the deeper role?
I think he could, and I'm reminded of when he first came to Spurs and he did it, and we wondered whether that was where he was always going to play.
Played Frankie Dons and he played deeper.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that the thing is with Ali is he does score goals and he's a difference maker. Like, you know, goals win games ultimately, and I think full time it would be a shame if he was that far away from goal. Like, I think when he gets his eye in, as he did last year, and he scored something like 10 in 9 after getting sent off against Ghent in February, so he came back to the team in the league the next game and scored, and then he just went on an incredible run. And I think when he gets his eye in like that, he's such a good goal scorer that you want him further forward. But again, something to praise Pochettino on, and you know, I don't know enough about Klopp to say whether he's keen on this, but so many of the players now are able to play more than one position and just do it really well. And I think, you know, obviously Real Madrid, Vertonghen played left wing back, Dier is obviously the obvious one, who can rotate between midfield and defence. Ali can play, you know, second striker or kind of deep midfield. Song can play striker, winger or number 10. And it feels so much more fluid than it did certainly 2 years ago, even last season to an extent. And I think, again, that's to his credit, and that's been one of the ways that Spurs have been able to kind of develop and move forward.
Liverpool fan is Dele Alli, apparently.
Yeah, I know. It was hard. I don't think he's ever played. I'm not sure he's scored against us before. He certainly hasn't played that well against us. And obviously, I was very aware that we scouted him for years, and it looked like we were going to get him. And when we didn't get him, I wasn't particularly that fast, because I think he might have, he scored that, I think he scored against, by the time he scored against United in the League Cup for MK Dons, I think he might already have signed for you guys. I can't remember whether it hadn't happened yet.
No, because Pochettino said that he's on record saying that he kind of went to that game and was like, I love him.
I remember having two
I mean, the story goes that he like went around Liverpool's training ground and all he wanted to do was meet Gerrard, and Gerrard was asleep.
Really?
I've
never heard that one. I've heard that Gerrard said I've also heard the story that Gerrard had met Dele Alli a few times when Liverpool were chasing him, and had recommended and said we should buy this guy, and was livid when we didn't.
I think it was, it's kind of been, you know, whether this is fair or not, it's kind of been used as like a stick to beat Liverpool with in terms of mismanagement. But yeah, apparently he went to Melwood, and he just wanted Gerrard, and basically if Gerrard had come over and said sorry, he probably would have done it there. And Gerrard was snoozing, and then Gerrard found out. It wasn't Gerrard's fault. Gerrard found out and was annoyed. So no one basically had the presence of mind to wake him up and say, like, you're a kid who is in awe of you is here.
It looks a horror era now.
Do players sleep at the training ground?
Is that a thing?
I think so. It's really just like in
the changing room, just gone. I mean, that's why Spurs are building that player lodge, isn't it? For kind of comfort between.
Or power nap. There is maybe massive health benefits of having like a 30-minute snooze.
Yeah, I guess.
In between doing stuff.
I think at the moment, you know, in pre-season, you know, the Poch's famous double sessions, they'll just kind of go back to the reception bit, and there'll be a few comfies room, but I think they'll go when the lodge is ready, they'll go back there and have a little lie down.
And a massage. I don't know why I find that really funny.
Yeah, I think that's what
happens. It's like seeing half out of there. It's like nursery.
It's hard work, mate, that pre-season.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
It's always painful when a player you missed out on scores against you, and I felt that on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, it just happens for every club. I mean, the amount of people that have now told the Spurs could have signed Suarez story.
Yeah.
I mean, Sherwood said it.
Mm.
Yeah. Ferdinand said it. Yeah. Harry Redknapp said it. Just the amount.
Cristiano Ronaldo to Liverpool did the rounds last week, and I always wonder how close was that really.
Yeah. I mean, Wenger's the king of it.
I was
going to
say,
because he seems to think it's encouraging to fans when he says, "Oh, I nearly signed Mbappe." Like, no, people don't want to know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So just keep quiet.
Yeah. Well done. Yeah. Well done.
Well done for trying.
Yeah. Let's talk about West Ham, because we've got that in midweek. Was it last 16? Are we last 16 now? I don't really keep up with the League Cup. I can't remember.
We're fourth round. I'm not even sure.
I think it is last 16.
Yeah, fourth round. Yeah, something like that.
I think Liverpool lost to Swansea in the third round, though. So.
What's Leicester, actually, mate? Okay. So get your facts right.
I just didn't even know that. I just knew they were going out.
What is that you're expecting? Because you said there about Winks now being probably our number one central midfielder. Dyer only came off for the last 10-15 minutes, didn't he, against Liverpool. What on earth are we going to put out in central midfield against West Ham?
The Moose.
And does it really matter? Oh, of course, yeah. Dembele's now Mr. Cup games, isn't he?
I actually meant Sissoko.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Dembele's a Sissoko, but surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Dembele...
That would be...
Still win you the game.
Very entertaining. The Moose is a variety of ways to see them both in central midfield.
I don't honestly know if Dembele's fit. Pochettino's press conference is Tuesday. I think it's a more interesting game than it perhaps might have been because of the returns of Lamella and Rose. And I, for one, am psyched.
You are really buzzing for Lamella coming back, aren't you?
A year to the day.
Is it bang on to the year?
Bang on a year to the day since he was last played.
Is he going to get anywhere near your team, Lamella, now?
No, I don't think so. We've had this argument. Actually, I was going to say we've had this discussion before, but we've had an argument before where you... You were quite angry, actually, in my... I think it was on WhatsApp. And you were just like, what are you talking about? And it's like,
you were talking nonsense.
I disagree, mate. I don't think he's...
I got both of us now, mate.
Yeah.
Well, don't come on my podcast and talk about
it. All right, then. So where does Lamella fit in?
I don't know. I think... Depends how fit he is. I think... Spurs have been really careful, and they are being really careful with it. Like, that he's probably going to be on the bench. He might not even play more than kind of 10 minutes. But I think it has been a bad injury and one that they're still not really sure about, I think. So it's not like, you know, Football Manager, where a player's injured and then they're back and they haven't got an injury sign next to them or whatever. It's more like... For now, he's training and he could play against West Ham, but then, you know, the day after West Ham, it'll be, you know, how are you, Eric? Are you able to train today?
Right, okay.
I still think it's at that stage. Poch might say otherwise tomorrow, but in terms of what role he's going to play, it does feel like Spurs, as I've said about five times on this podcast, have kind of moved on quite a lot since Lamella was in the team.
That's what I said in the message. You told me it was nonsense. That's word for word what I said to you in that message, and you were just like, "Yeah, well, there's more."
No. I could dig out the message. You said were basically saying you thought Lamella was going to leave in the summer. This was the end of last season.
I said I wouldn't be too against it, nor do I think it would be that surprising. That's what I said. But then he was injured. If he wasn't injured, I'd stand by it. I think he could.
At least on loan. Some games.
Yeah, I think he could have gone back to Roma
He'd play in the League Cup. I mean, if you went out the League Cup, I can't imagine where you're ever going to play, when you're going to play Lamella from the start.
But it's easy to forget, though, that if Lamella gets back fit, which I still think is an if, and back to his best, then he was still a very useful player who more energy than most of the squad, can pick a pass, was starting to score more goals around about the time he got injured. He'd got a couple in the league at the start of last season. And again, can play a couple of positions, which is what Poch values. So I think there's definitely a place for him in the squad. It just depends on his fitness.
He was 2 years ago what Sissoko is now to this team, I think.
I don't think that's fair, because I think when Spurs pushed Leicester close for the title, in that run of games toward the end where they were very good from December, he was in the 11, he was an important part of the 11, and he was fully involved. And there's no reason why he can't get back to that level, unless there is something underlying that's just never going to go away that we don't know about.
Fair enough. I think Adam Nathan said it on a pod once, friend of the pod.
Yeah.
He, out of the 11 when we pushed Leicester close, he was the only one in the whole league that wasn't in the top five in their position and was replaceable, I think. And I think we found a system that does replace him. And I agree that he can come back in certain situations. There are a lot of games throughout the season, but I think if somebody offered you 20, 25 million in January/in the summer for a guy that's been here 5 years and had 18 months worth of good football, not consecutively, I think you'd take it, to be honest. I'm more than happy to have him back. Yeah. And I think
don't disagree with that. I mean, I'd be surprised if anyone's
going to offer. I think it's
25 million.
He's in that, you'll have to accept a loan deal bracket with maybe like a fee at the end of it sort of situation. He's not played. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't take him.
No.
Ah, damn.
Liverpool don't need another kind of slightly flaky attacking player.
Yeah, a team of midfielders.
Take any of your defenders off.
Okay, we'll move on to United because we haven't really got that long left. So United at Old Trafford, 12:30 on Saturday. We're good in the early kickoffs. We've won three already this season. I think we won three last season at the tail end of last season as well. We had like, Watford, Bournemouth and someone else. I can't remember who it was.
Good night.
Seemed to be doing all right in them. We've lost them twice in a row, 1-0, with quite annoyingly bad performances.
At Old Trafford.
How do you see this one going? I mean, this is perfect Mourinho, isn't it? It's in a little bit of a bad fortnight, going to Liverpool, drawing 0-0, like you said earlier, with a gettable defence, if you like. Losing to Huddersfield, I know they beat Benfica in the week, but this is just prime Mourinho to grind out something again, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. It feels like such a big game because it feels like the Spurs are level on points with United now, and it does look like City are just the best team in the country at the moment and kind of threatening to run away with it. It kind of feels like this is the game where we'll find out who is the more realistic title challenger. You know, will it be Spurs chasing another team, or will it be United and City as a top two? So it does feel big, and obviously that it's not as black and white as that. But it feels like if Spurs go there and win, then they will be realistic contenders to City.
Oh, massively.
But yeah, I think one thing that sort of Kane said after the Liverpool game yesterday, which was quite telling, which was that Spurs are improving on last year. So I think the two defeats after Christmas last year with Liverpool and West Ham.
Yeah.
And Spurs have now gone and beaten Liverpool very comfortably and West Ham very comfortably. Well, in fact, it wasn't that comfortable in the end, was it? 3-2, so going to Old Trafford, where Spurs have lost 1-0 in the last 2 years, is another chance to kind of show that they've moved forward again. So it's a really big game.
This one's more of a mark, I think, than the Liverpool game. If you win a big one at Old Trafford, I'd really take seriously that you might threaten City.
I'd agree with that. I think it will be more of a marker. Yeah, it does feel prime Mourinho. I think he's got the better... The 1 2 years ago, I think, is a bit unfair because it was the first game of the season, wasn't it? And Spurs were so undercooked in that game 2 years ago. It was the first game of 2015-16. Yeah, Walker and Garland. Spurs were so undercooked. But the one at Old Trafford last year was quite significant because it felt like Mourinho really outthought Poch. It was the time when Rose and Walker were really flying and he occupied them really well with... I think it was Martial and Mkhitaryan, and it felt like a proper Mourinho job, as you put it.
Yeah.
But then, as we've discussed, I think Klopp did a job on Poch last year, and he's obviously responded to that quite emphatically. You know, can he respond to Mourinho on Saturday?
You saw him play Liverpool a couple of weeks ago, obviously. Pretty dull for the neutral, but what did you see in that game that makes you think that Spurs might be able to get a result? Or do you think we're not, set up for it?
I think United have been made to look so much better than they are this season. Like their midfield, I think you could just outplay them. Their midfield is not particularly threatening. Especially when they've got Pogba. Pogba obviously the early season form looked like he actually might be a bit special this year. Then he's got injured. But even he can drift in and out of games. It's not like he dominates full games. But Matic and Herrera are quite like tactically very good players. Like if he wants to set up to like destroy a team, and he can use those players and they're useful for that. But they're never going to get on the ball and outpass you, those two. And similarly, when Mkhitaryan went to United, I was like, God, that's weird. Why didn't Klopp go for him? There was not even a suggestion we went for him. And I wonder whether Klopp didn't think that he'd be up for, whether he knew that Mkhitaryan had his heart set on United, or whether he thought he wouldn't be up for it. But he started okay, got a few assists this season, Mkhitaryan. But every time I've watched him for like a 90-minute game, I've just been like, God, he's actually a bit rubbish. How did he score all those goals for Dortmund? And in Anfield, he was useless. Couldn't make the ball stick. So even he's the sort of guy who they look to make play, and I don't think he's actually up to the level to really hurt you. Mm. Matty hasn't got the full backing of Mourinho either. So it's a counter-attack game again if they play, regardless if they play Martial or Rashford next to Lukaku. Then even Lukaku's rubbish at holding the ball up that much. He is better when United have more of the ball. He's not as good as someone like Kane, where he'll make everything count, he'll make everything stick. So they're definitely, I think the big teams will pick up points off United. It wouldn't surprise me if you won this week. If you set out well, the best you could do is let United have a bit more of the ball, I think, probably, and draw them out because they can sit in.
Do you go with that in mind, Dan? Do you go with Son again? Do you think he's earned the start after Liverpool, or is it just not the game for him? Is it back to Ali, Kane, Eriksen maybe?
Yeah, it depends on fitness, doesn't it? Yeah, it'd be nice to have Dembele back next to Winks. It'd be really nice. Yeah. But or have Dier in there as a kind of true holding midfielder at Old Trafford. I don't know. I feel like Son would work in the same way that he works against Liverpool, just running at them at pace. And I don't know whether Phil Jones is hurt badly after Huddersfield, but he's been a really important part of their kind of strong defensive start to the season. And if he's not fit and they have to play Lindelof again or someone else, then
I can't imagine he'll start. But if he did,
then you wonder if Spurs are thinking of exploiting United weaknesses in the same way they did on Sunday.
I'd never look forward to any big game away, obviously. But I remember last season really thinking, I think we were in a really good run of form when we went to Old Trafford. If we'd just beaten someone, I think we just spanked someone 4-0 maybe. And there was just something about it from the start that looked like we were getting Mourinho'd. And I think it was Kane that lost the ball on the halfway line, wasn't it? And they just one pass straight through Vertonghen and Alderweireld. And Mkhitaryan scored, and that was it. There was nothing. We weren't getting back in that game. And it just feels like we need to take that kind of mentality of being a big club to Old Trafford and to Anfield and to Stamford Bridge. And we've been saying it for a few years, but now there seems to be something to really
took it to the Bernabeu.
Exactly. And we're getting players back all the time. Rose is coming back. Davis is coming back. You know, the meta for better for worse. Like, Dembele perhaps, Wanyama, although
I don't know, he's seeing a specialist this week.
Yeah,
because there'll be an update tomorrow.
Another central midfield partnership for another season, Dan, as you mentioned last season.
Well, the very piece I'm writing at the moment.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Looking forward to that. Sorry to spoiler alert. Should we do some listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Spurs in Barcelona on Twitter asks specifically George, what does Jordan Henderson do? We've touched on it, but it'd be nice to elaborate.
Well, I'm glad I pointed out the pass that he did. I'm looking at it again. It's an unbelievable ball. And sometimes he has games when he'll do that, and you'll be like, my God, Jordan Henderson's got this other dimension to his game, and then he too easily goes back into his shell of sideways passing. He's not completely like that. He's got a bit more about him, but he doesn't show it enough. If Jordan Henderson doesn't start next to Dier, in the World Cup next, so I wouldn't be unhappy. I'd hate to see both of them play next to each other, unless we're playing like a really good team. We want to be super defensive.
Is he Liverpool captain?
Yeah, but he's good. He's at times this season been very good as our, because we've recast him as like the defensive midfielder, and there's been times when he's played that as really, really well and been a really good destroyer, and he's got enough passing ability to make those passes from DM to get other people on the ball. But again, I almost blame Klopp more for that, in the sense that I don't think he's being told, Henderson, stay. And the same with that, Dyer is obviously always told, go too far away from the three centre backs. Make sure that you fill in when one goes. I'm sure Henderson's not being told that. If he was given a really disciplined role on the training ground and played that, I think he'd actually be quite an effective defensive midfielder. So that's what he does. I think he is better than people make out at the moment. But he's never going to be a creative box-to-box midfielder like he pretended to be when he was younger.
Wasn't it Ferguson that said he couldn't run?
Or you questioned his gait, about his, about the fact he runs from the hips, which I still think is ridiculous. Yeah, I think that was widely discredited. I think he's...
That's does run a bit weird, though, doesn't
he? He does run quite weird. He kind of... I can see why someone pointed out, but I don't think it's... Ferguson said he was going to have injury problems when he's older. And he has actually had a recent one, but I don't think you can necessarily call that as a bit of Ferguson wizardry. Yeah, he does do more than made out Henderson, but he's never going to be the creative kind of Gerrard-esque replacement that maybe people hoped.
Do you know, I don't know how much your finger is on the pulse of Liverpool fans, what is the overall feeling of Klopp?
You can split Liverpool fans into two. Your average Scouser, I think, is quite a good football fan. They're not kind of out there on the streets kind of like Arsenal fans. They're quite kind of realistic and savvy, and I don't think you'd find many Liverpool fans on Merseyside saying Klopp out. Your general kind of maybe fans in Thailand who create various Twitter accounts would get on the bandwagon and join the... There is like a Klopp out profile that seems to relentlessly tweet, and it's annoying. I think it's the fans who are really quite maybe far away who get on that kind of social media bandwagon, and often they can seem the loudest if that's what you're looking at. And obviously I spend more time on Twitter than I do on Merseyside, but I don't think your average Liverpool fan who really kind of watches the game a lot wants Klopp to go. I think he's as good as we could get at the moment. I think it was a bit of a coup that we even got him. I think he's got the ability to attract players that are maybe slightly above our class at the moment, so I think it'd be silly. If we finish 14th this season and he does nothing to correct the issues now, there's every chance he might not be there this time next year, but I think he will turn things around. I think Liverpool have shown at times they could be good in patches this season.
Ancelotti was at Wembley on Sunday watching the game.
Yeah.
Now available Carlo Ancelotti, you never know.
I don't know. He's basically a journeyman manager now, isn't he, almost? Obviously at a very top level, but I don't think he'd necessarily be the answer.
Dan, a final question to go back to Spurs. A little bit bittersweet, I suppose, as an idea. Neil Ashton says Kane talked to every Spanish journalist in the mix zone in Real Madrid, meaning the Real transfer is on. The reason I say it's bittersweet is because if Real Madrid are coming in for one of your players, then you kind of know they're doing the right thing. And I think we've always known it about Kane, but there was always that niggling doubt of, can you do it on the international / Champions League stage? Do you have any opinion on the idea of Harry Kane going to Real Madrid? Is it something that you could think, yes, definitely could happen?
I kind of think that in that he's obviously a top striker and he's good enough for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I think my view is that he wouldn't... I don't think he would ever go there while Ronaldo's still there, because I think the reason Benzema's so good at what he does is not, as we saw last week, because he scores loads of goals, because he's quite a selfless striker.
Mm.
He's happy to pass to Ronaldo more often than not. I don't think Kane would be up for that job. He likes to score himself. Yeah, I mean, I actually thought it was quite... I never buy into this stuff where people say, oh, journalists are biased against my club. And you'll find that a lot of journalists that cover lots of clubs will literally put in their Twitter bio something like biased against your club, because they get that they face that accusation so much and they just get so bored of it because they're really not. But I've got to say, I did find the amount of Kane to Real Madrid stuff around that game a little bit bizarre. And obviously it is a journalist's job to create a narrative around a match just so you're not talking about passes an hour, and it is a job to view a game in a wider context as much as possible, but there was just so much like this is an audition for Kane to get a Real that it got a bit weird, I think. He's never obviously made any kind of indication that he wants to go to Real Madrid. He's only said he's happy at Tottenham. And he doesn't seem like the kind of person, he seems like a guy who likes living in London with his childhood sweetheart, watching NFL, walking his dogs and playing golf. He doesn't seem like somebody who's like, I need to get to Spain. And John Nicholson did a good piece on Football 365 today, actually, Monday. You'll be able to find it about why we're so obsessed with saying that Kane has to take a step up in terms of finances and silverware. Maybe he's just happy earning £90,000 a week at Tottenham.
I thought you were right. There was actually a lot of noise about it because there was no foundation for it. I thought maybe it was a little bit of people being quite excited that an England striker for the first time, I think maybe since Michael Owen, could conceivably go to one of those top clubs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which would be cool. The same way when Bale went, to Welsh, I was still like, oh, that's pretty awesome. The Welshman is good enough to go play for them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just put one more spoke in the Spurs wheel before it runs away. I would be very worried if I was a Spurs
finish
fan.
The pod.
If you look at the big four clubs who could conceivably throw the money at Spurs to make Levy sell Kane, Real Madrid have got Benzema's about to turn 30, Ronaldo's 33, Lewandowski's about to turn 30, Cavani's about to turn 30, and there's already noise about maybe him getting moved on, and Barcelona's Suarez about to turn 30, and Messi's obviously getting older. All four big clubs will be looking this summer to buy a striker to soften the blow of players getting old and moving on, and Kane's going to be up there maybe with Dybala or whatever from Juventus and a few others, but he's going to be on that shortlist, and if all four are looking for them, I'd be shocked if you don't see some money thrown at you this summer.
If he has a good World Cup.
Yeah. I don't disagree with George.
More dangerous to that, though, is Pochettino being targeted, which is another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Which could happen.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be a shame when Coutinho goes to Barcelona? That would be horrible.
But had to put something in there.
But I agree with George. But yeah, I do think there's a strange amount of noise in it at the moment. And
Okay, that's fair enough. All right, let's end it there then. George, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You were reasonably magnanimous, I'd say.
I would say not at all.
No?
Spent the whole pod trying to say how unlucky
it was.
Yeah,
that's good to me.
Justify it. There's plenty worse that could have been done. No, thank you very much for coming on. Dan, nice to see you, mate.
Cheers,
thanks for letting us have your kitchen again.
No worries.
We'll see you next week for a Man United review and a preview of a game I haven't looked up yet.
Crystal Palace. Oh, Real Madrid, you idiot.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Just them. All right, bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.